Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Are your wiper blades chattering, skipping, or squeaking? Don't let streaks or smearing on your windshield compromise your visibility. When it's time to replace your wiper blades, stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts and see our selection. Our professional parts people will even install your new wiper blades while you wait. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store, or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today.
46% of Americans expect to leave behind financial obligations when they pass away, so it's crucial to make sure your family is financially protected. Policy Genius helps you find the right life insurance coverage by comparing options from America's top insurers with help from licensed, award-winning agents. Secure your financial future with Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com to get free life insurance quotes in just a few clicks. That's policygenius.com.
Hey, I'm Tyler.
And I'm KC.
And you're listening to
The Element Fishing Podcast.
EFP. What's happening, all my woods people? It's a rainy Friday, and we've got a dog inside barking in the background. Sorry if y'all have to hear that. But we're chilling. We're doing a little bit of work. We're doing a little bit of thinking. We've been doing a little bit of fishing.
It is planning central around here right now.
Planning size on.
It gives me a little bit of the heebie-jeebies.
The heebs, bro.
Yeah, man. It's kind of rough. We aren't starting a fishing podcast.
No, we aren't.
But we do like to talk about it from time to time.
Man, I'll just say this. I've been seeing some shed hunting posts. Hadn't been super fired up about them. I think sheds, man, we've been back and forth on this a little bit maybe, but over the years, but I think we've been fairly consistent in the fact that I'd rather scout, postseason scout, and find where deer are going to be next year than I would find sheds. Now, if I had my own farm in the Midwest and we were burning CRP and, you know, had a side-by-side and all this stuff, I might like the shed hunting a little bit more. So I'm not hating on it at all. I think it's a thing that I just don't – it's culturally not my thing, because about March, when all the deer start dropping around here, we are thinking big bass for the most part.
And it's also foot-tall vegetation on the ground right now.
Mm-hmm.
We just looked at a trail camera photo today. There's a bachelor group of deer on Texas public land. $4, had 8 antlers.
Yeah.
And today is the 15th of March, which is when I always say a good amount of deer have lost the antlers. So it might be a little bit late this year. By the way, this podcast brought to you by First Light Gear. If you need some fishing gear, don't go to First Light Gear. But if you're thinking about next year's gear, now's the time. And in fact, if you're listening to this like within a close time frame, there's free shipping on everything right now through the end of the weekend.
Yeah. You can get turkey stuff if you want it. In fact, to go along with your point here, there's been this thing that we've had going on called Turkey Week. Mm-hmm. And we've been a part of it. And our buddy Tony Peterson, he's a good turkey caller, good hunter. And the video that he is posting is, it looks like dead of winter. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it's just different. Like you said, the grass is growing up around here.
Yeah.
Back there, you know, down there or wherever he's at, it's leaves on the ground and no leaves on the trees, you know.
Mm-hmm.
For us, I mean, I'm looking outside right now. We got pollen going everywhere. We got, I mean, we got oak trees that are just loaded with those little tassels. I've got pears growing on the deer pear tree. Mm. Like it ain't, the flowers are already growing. They're turning into pears, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, Guys, we're not super fired up about whitetail right now, even though I know this summer I'm going to be just chomping at the bit. I am into the fishing stuff right now, and I want to do it all. But what we do is a lot of approachable stuff that we can actually achieve around here. One of those things is when there are fish moving up the creeks, we tend to get after them. So there's crappie and sand bass and those kind of things that we'll get to going up the creeks.
You're speaking about that deer pear tree out there.
Yep.
We just did a little ditty, right? Had a little something to do with trees. And it's a thing that you kind of keyed in on. Mm-hmm. And absolutely, Tyler did not lead us astray one little bit on this deal, right? What was going on, Tyler?
Well, this isn't necessarily my original thoughts, but
what
I learned at some point that redbud trees, when they start blooming, it means that the sand bass are
running. I see what you're saying. You're saying you heard that from somebody else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we've been seeing redbud trees blooming the last couple weeks. So we went to try to catch some sand bass. And
put that theory to the test.
Yeah. We're going to talk about it a little bit. We took your boat out and had one of the best times I've had in a minute, dude.
Man, it was pretty fun.
Yeah, for sure, dude.
Okay.
For sure.
I think that there's something to it. I grew up doing a lot of sand bass fishing. And one of the great things about sand bass is they are just like eager to take a lure. They like to eat stuff. And you combine that with a fish that's just has a large population in a water body. And you combine that with a lot of dudes in the boat, it makes for a pretty good time. I mean, my boat's awesome because it can hold a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like the fastest. It's not the most technological, but it holds a lot of people in gear really good, which works out well for us. And then you pair that with just smoking a lot of fish on light tackle and hard fights, like,
yeah,
makes for a good day.
So let's talk a little bit about kind of what was working for us. And this stuff isn't rocket science. Like, guys go and do this from the bank every year, do well. But we took the boat out and we did really well.
Well, I think one of the things that worked for us really good on that is the timing of what you kind of keyed in on the red buds mixed with some, like, MRI, as Mark Drew would say, right? Most recent information. We had a buddy that let us in on a little tip. He said, "Hey, man, I hear them fish are up in there. Some guys have been telling me." And we said, "You know what? Instead of going and trying to plow our own field, we're going to go with that we've heard."
Mm-hmm.
Made a big difference.
Inside info is good stuff, man. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you got a guy that knows and he's in the know, man, it's helpful for sure.
Yeah, somebody you trust, right? Yep. You don't want to get the old misleading information thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we ended up working up a creek system pretty far, actually, from kind of the main lake. And usually, like, when I think about sand bass, which I don't know if we've said this yet, but white bass is what most people call them. We call them sand bass in East Texas.
Good point.
Those fish, I typically think about the closer you are to the lake along that creek system, the better the fishing will be. But I think a lot of it has to do with like the depth of the creek or river that is coming out and that kind of thing. So, but a lot of these creeks, you can catch them in creeks. I feel like the closer you get to the lake, the better. So if that road system where you can enter is closer to the creek, it helps. Or if you're in a boat, you know, you can talk about fishing near the mouth or even a little bit further up and typically find, you know, pretty good amounts of fish. But we went pretty far up this thing, and it took a little while. It was a nice little run that, I enjoy going into a creek system and just driving down it with a boat. There's something about it that I just
– yeah.
It's relaxing.
You know,
it's fun.
My kids and I did that the other day too, and they loved it.
Yeah.
Which I thought was interesting.
It's adventure, man. It's adventure.
Because they my oldest can talk pretty good, but he doesn't have like an extensive vocabulary. But he was like, let's go back in the forest when we were talking about driving the, you know, we were out in the lake and he was like wanting to go back up in there into mm-hmm. the creek system in the boat. And he just thought it was so cool to like drive through with the limb, the, you know, trees overhanging the boat and like seeing snakes in the logs and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. They were into it, man.
Yeah. It's, I mean, it's cool. Mm-hmm. And, so we work our way back in there and we get, to a little kind of open spot where some beavers have made some more, you know, open water type stuff and decide to, it's, the water's real clear once we get there
mm-hmm.
and you don't have a trolling motor on your boat right now. So, you told me hop up on the front and just see as we're going. Well, I start seeing, we'd seen some carp and buffalo or whatever.
Which is always a good sign.
Yeah.
If they've moved up shallow, the water temp is getting close.
Yeah. So as we're kind of going through real slowly with the big motor, this kind of open water, I'm looking up ahead and all I can see is just these like dust clouds underwater, mm-hmm. just tons of them. And I'm like, man, this looks like littler fish that are getting spooked as opposed to like carp that are in the middle of a breeding frenzy, you know, spawning mm-hmm. frenzy. And, making some sort of a big cloud or not even like also you a lot of times even with the big motor you can like get up on carp and see them before you know they yeah. take off.
They're not the these, spookiest of things.
These things were getting out, so I was like, man, this is highly likely this is crappie or largemouth or you know sand bass.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, we end up kind of going about halfway into this opening and we're kind of drifting around. We're thinking we're going to hit these shorelines and maybe catch some crappie, like the weed bed shorelines. And we're kind of fishing here and there. You had a cane pole, right?
I had a jigging pole.
Jigging pole.
So, like, I have a cane pole on the boat. I usually use that for, like, minnow fishing.
Mm.
But if I'm going to jig, I like that jigging pole with that real soft tip on it. And I'd put a, like, bigger-sized body, rubber body on that jig, and I hung a fish for a second, missed him, and then I jigged around the same spot, clear water, right, and I saw a fish take a swipe at it and wouldn't take it, and so I was like, hey, there's fish here,
mm-hmm.
but what I'm working right now ain't doing the trick.
Yeah, so you were like, start getting the anchor, mm-hmm. and you're like, they're right out here in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And you get the anchor, and you're working through getting that rope untangled and everything, and you're like, cast out there, Tyler. Well, about the time you get the anchor in the water, I got a bite, and I'm using a slip cork, which if you don't know what a slip cork is, I'll explain it real quick. The first thing you put on a slip cork rig is this rubber stopper, and it's a little thing that goes on your line, and it's so small that it's kind of tight on your line as it goes up, and you can move it, but it's kind of tight, and it'll
stay
in place.
They probably make those for different line sizes, I bet, don't they?
Yeah, they do. Yep, yeah, they do. So within a certain range of pound test, usually, or for, you know, typical monofilament lines. Well, so you put that on, and then the next thing you put on is a slip cork or slip bobber, and then the next thing you put on is a jig, and you tie a jig on or whatever your bait is that's going to go underneath. So when you cast it, that slip cork falls down on top of your jig and makes for a nice, like, heavy package to throw out there that's kind of aerodynamic. And then whenever it hits the water, your jig sinks, and the line is slipping through the cork, and it goes up to the bobber. We got a dog entering the house.
Oh, no.
How
pup.
In the world did that happen? Anyway, the slip cork will slide up to that rubber stopper, and then it'll be, you know, whatever the depth is that you put that slip or that rubber stopper up to. So for us, we were fishing like, I don't know, maybe 2 foot, probably not any deeper than 3 foot down. And that's what I had it about set at, and I caught a fish just right off the bat. We were wondering what it was. We thought it might have been a crappie, but it turns out it was a nice sand bass.
Which is what we kind of had the info on that was up in there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always hoping for crappie because I love crappie.
Yeah.
But
well, it's like a saltwater fillet on a freshwater fish.
It is.
You know?
But we'll talk about it in a little bit, but I kind of like sand bass a little more than I used to.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's some reasons.
Yeah.
But I think one of the reasons that maybe somebody might turn their nose up at sand bass is there are lakes where these white bass or sand bass school on big groups of shad, especially in the summertime, in massive amounts. And you can throw out into, like, follow the birds around and throw out into them and catch a dillion of them, as we say. Mm-hmm. So it's, like, not super challenging to catch them a lot of times.
I also think
and
that
they're smaller, it seems like, in those situations sometimes, too.
Sometimes you'll get into bigger ones, but, like, a lot of times you're worried about, is this fish big enough to keep or not? And then when you got to – I find, too, personally, that fish on the bottom end of the slot or, you know, length limit or whatever, usually are kind of shy or real close to almost not being worth filleting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like a 10-inch sand bass, you're not getting a whole lot off of that fish.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times they're skinnier fish, too, because they're younger.
Mm-hmm.
And they haven't started building up them shoulders yet. But I think, too, that in the summer, there's a chance they don't taste as good.
Yeah.
You know, the lakes kind of turn over. The lakes kind of get nasty. But right now, the lakes are cold and clear.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store, or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today. You ever get that feeling you're stuck inside staring at screens and a primal urge kicks in? You crave wide open spaces, fresh air, the chance to connect with the land. Well, maybe it's time to find your own piece of the wild, but searching for property can be a maze. That's where Land.com comes in. They got millions of listings across the country, from mountain ranches to hidden fishing holes. Their search tools are like a seasoned guide helping you narrow down what you want. Land.com isn't just about buying and selling. It's about finding a place to hunt, fish, explore, or simply sit by a campfire and listen to the crickets. So head over to Land.com today to turn one day into today, because trust me, there's nothing quite like the feeling of standing on your own piece of earth.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years, and not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
There's a thing that people think that's a thing with catfish and stuff too.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I can definitely see that, man. I mean, and... But anyway, I catch that fish, and we finally get kind of anchored up, set into a spot. You get your bait changed. By that time, I've caught three total now. And
switched to, instead of a slip cork, I just got like what you might traditionally think of as, not like a red and white, what you may call a bobber. I call them all corks. But it was like one of those ones that has the spring on the bottom, the tension spring.
Mm-hmm.
And I call that a jigging cork, because you pop it and it brings your jig up and then it falls back down. So every time you pop it, it's kind of jigging that jig right below it.
Mm-hmm.
And you can set it to a certain depth. And I had it set kind of like you did, like that 2.5-3 foot mark. It was pretty nice.
Yeah. Well, it went from like, I hope we can catch a few, and you know, well, we had three camera dudes in the boat, mm-hmm, with us, and I'm hoping like we're all organizing this effort to try to catch a few fish on camera.
Mm-hmm.
To all of a sudden, it was like, this is the baddest fishing trip we've been on in a while. And I mean, we're catching like 17 inch sand bass, like just stocky 17 inch sand bass, and lots of them. Mm-hmm. It gets to the point where we catch so many that the camera guys are starting to put the cameras down and fish. And Eric had a, like, put on a rooster tail that was bright orange, and it was pretty big, and he just starts smoking Mondos on that.
Yeah, I feel like Eric caught a few less fish than we did, but his, like, average length and poundage was real big.
Mm-hmm. I feel like that, too.
It was interesting.
It was. And we didn't catch a single crappie. So it's almost like you would assume that sand bass moved before crappie.
Yeah. Yeah, that's that. I've always kind of understood that to be the case.
That's, I mean, it would make sense because I never really have caught crappie till, you know, it warmed up quite a bit. But the sand bass, you can catch them in February.
Well, I thought we were going to kind of stacking the deck a little bit because it warmed up so fast, so quick. I thought we were going to end up with both species up in there.
But there was some crappie up in there because we saw some guys that had crappie in the area. So I know that there was some moving up, but where we were at, it was just like a highway, man, of sand bass apparently. So we end up, there was four of us fishing by the end of the thing, and we didn't quite catch a limit, which would have been 100. But we caught a bunch.
I bet you we caught close to 80. Because towards the end there, you and I were getting kind of close to our personal limits, and I was kind of not culling, but if one was like the 11 to 12 or something, I'd just throw him back in the water.
Mm-hmm.
Because I knew that every third or fourth cast would be a 15, 16 incher.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't sound like a lot of difference, but those fish fill out a lot at that point in their life. So you end up with some girthy fish.
Guys, we had a quadruple on at one point. I mean, that doesn't happen. Like, it happens when you're fishing them under the birds and they're schooling and actively eating.
Mm-hmm.
These fish are, like, spawning. And we're catching them, like, you know, on a spawn run, four at a time. We caught them one time, four at a time.
Y'all want to hear a funny story?
What's
that? We were fishing, catching them so good that, like, it's hard to take a break to use the bathroom. So I cast my rod out on that jigging cork and leave it out there static, right? And I just have it underneath my underneath my armpit, and I need to pee, and I'm just going to pee off from the boat. Well, a fish is so aggressive that it just smokes that static jig out there while I'm mid-bathroom.
Stream.
And I don't know what to do. So I finish what I'm doing, but I can't, like, zip my britches because I have to hold on to the pole. So I just have to make sure that I'm pointed in the right direction here so that no one else in the boat is offended. But I get the fish to the boat and then secure my clothing and got the fish all the way in.
That
was pretty funny in the boat. It was a funny time.
My dad did that one time with a dove. He shot a dove out of the air with his pants unzipped.
I could see him doing that.
I was probably 8 years old. I was hunting with him, you know,
and
maybe a year or two older than that. And
he's serious about his killing critters sometimes.
For
you know?
Sure.
He's
for
into
sure.
it.
Yeah.
And then you and I both kind of slowed down, actually. Well, a couple things. Our rigs ended up being a little bit too deep after a little while, somehow or another. And if you were on the bottom, you were not catching a fish.
Yeah.
So we had to make sure our depth was adjusted correctly. And then it still slowed down.
My rubber stopper, I didn't realize, was getting moved up as I was casting and stuff at times, I think, or somehow getting moved up.
Same thing for me.
And so I didn't realize, but I was kind of on the bottom.
If I was like at 3.5 feet or something, is nothing happening. And then it all slowed down in general on the jigs. We know Eric's catching fish on spinners. We have to switch to spinners, and
the sun went behind a cloud.
Yeah,
a big
I thought
cloud.
It was inverse of that, but whatever.
Yeah, the sun.
It was something to
sun
do with
went
the
behind
sun,
a cloud, like as it got lower, and eventually it came out from below the cloud as it got later, and all of a sudden it was on again, like bing bong. But we did all move to moving baits. I think we all ended with moving baits on, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I had this, there was this company called Six Sense out of Texas that makes some pretty cool baits. And I had bought these at Bass Pro that I saw. It was a little bitty minnow looking bait with a tiny spinner underneath it. And I was like, man, that'll work for crappie really well. So I bought them and I tied that thing on. I caught three in a row right off the bat. And then it started swimming funky. And I'm cheap, so I didn't want to put another body on it. and kept fishing it, and I didn't know it was swimming funky because when it would get close to me, it wouldn't swim that funky. But I realized the other day when I cast it after we had been fishing that day that it was swimming funny. And I was like, no wonder. I mentioned when I wasn't catching them, I was like, man, I think my bait's swimming sideways or something weird. But they would not hit it when it wasn't swimming straight. So after like the third or fourth fish, it wouldn't swim straight, and I wasn't getting hits again. So something to think about there if you're going to try to do this.
There's a little tactic to it. It seems like you're wearing them out, but like every once in a while, there'd just be this little weird thing that would happen. You're like, man, I'm not catching anything. And you think it's just like, you know, not your time right then. But then you make an adjustment and you go catching fish again. Mm-hmm. And it's like, there's something with my rig.
Yeah.
It's a thing.
So I took that bait and cut it off because you offered me the trusty, rusty H&H. And that H&H would catch them. That's catching
bait.
You
still got my chartreuse H&H, don't you?
I don't think so. I think I cut it off and gave it back to you. Because I believe okay. I did.
Thank you.
But I don't know that for sure. I wasn't throwing it the other day when I went out with Journey.
I know where to get them.
Anyway, that H&H caught you a bunch of fish and caught me some. Mm-hmm. And then we kind of took some pictures before it got too dark and headed back and had, you know, I mean, I'm telling y'all, I was having so much fun. I was losing my mind catching these things. It was really cool. It's really cool when fish are biting and you can see things like your bait not swimming actually affect, you know, catch rates.
Mm-hmm.
Because then it becomes important to you to check when you're not catching them all your stuff over and over
again. Say your over and under was a 3-fish day. Well, if your bait's not swimming right, you're catching 0 fish. And you're like, oh, they weren't biting today.
Yeah.
But it's because your bait wasn't doing the right thing.
Yeah. Which is a good reason to try different baits throughout the day. Because it's not even so much the bait as it is like that particular bait you got on your line is not swimming good or it's doing something funky or whatever.
Oh, it's like bass. You know, oh, we couldn't hit them to hit jigs. But, man, I tied on a black and blue worm Texas rig and smoked them. It's like, well, maybe your jig wasn't doing the right thing.
Yeah, for sure. Maybe your jig was turning over or the skirt was getting caught on the hook weird or whatever.
Or it was just too big, too, which is a whole deal.
Falling super fast or whatever, yeah. Mm-hmm. It is interesting, man. So,
but that led us to the cleaning and the eating of the sand bass, which this is like a little contested. My dad is one of the nose turners on this deal. I told him.
Is he related to Ted Turner?
Yeah, I wish. Tina, I think.
Tina Turner, that's the one.
I told him we smoked him. I was trying to get him to come out there, you know, put his boat in and go fishing. And he's like, sand bass? And I said, yeah. And he didn't say anything else. Didn't care. And it's like, dude, you don't understand. These fish were good. And I know what they go – people go off of, oh, you shouldn't eat frozen sand bass. They get soft and squishy or mushy or whatever. And I just didn't see that being the case.
We froze them.
Well, we coolered them for a whole day, cleaned them the next day, which people say you shouldn't do on sand bass. And I get – when we were cleaning them, they were a little slimy and a little bit mushy. But then we packaged them well, froze them, kept them cold the whole time, and then thawed them out, rinsed them off, and they were perfect.
Mm-hmm.
No issues at all.
Perfect.
They were, man. Like, we did the whole – I've really got onto this mustard – binder thing with fish. I'm into it. I think it works well. It just keeps all those granules of cornmeal on the fish. And when you do that on those fish fillets and fry them golden brown and delicious,
there's not better food,
I don't
really
think that, like, if there was crappie and sand bass, I wouldn't mind if you just mixed them all together and ate them.
Yeah.
It wouldn't make a difference to me at all. Mm-hmm. I don't want a sand bass pile and a crappie pile. They're fine.
Yeah.
Sand bass have a red, it's not even a blood line, it's like a red layer of meat on the outside of their fillet. Like the red comes from between the skin and the meat. And so right there, there's like what a lot of people might want to cut out or fillet off or something. We just cooked it up and I couldn't tell any difference at all.
I feel like there's a lot of people that cut that off, but kind of hurts me to think about.
Mm-hmm.
For a couple of reasons, but the main reason is there is, to me, there's like you have to weigh all kinds of stuff in life. And one of the things that you got to weigh out is like the like, how much do you think that it's important to get your own food? Mm-hmm. How much do you think that it's important that you have an idea of where that food came from? Mm-hmm. And then how important is, and how much time do you have? How important is your time, and how much time do you have in the day to mess with said food, right? Mm-hmm. Because in all honesty, if we weren't filming, it would have been, you know, it would have been taxing and tough if we had a job and then had to clean all those fish that next day.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, so it kind of, you know, like, it's not something that I wouldn't do, but when you talk about filleting all those fish and then also like being trying to cut bloodlines off of them, man, you're talking about some time investment.
Sure enough.
And guess what? There's going to be a bunch of kids that put a bunch of ketchup on them things and just eat them and don't care how good they taste.
I was one of those kids.
And it's like, man, it's going to be gone in no time. You mm-hmm. know, it just hurts to think mm-hmm. about, you know? But anyway, just some thoughts about it. But anyway, the fish tasted great, and yeah. we're going to do some more of that stuff and hopefully, you know, maybe make some cool videos here and there along the way. And sometimes we're just going to do it like a couple of peepaws, you know? So, but it was a good time, man. I'm hoping that we can, like I said, catch some more fish in the future.
There might be some saltwater fish in our future.
I'm hoping, man. Ooh. I'm hoping that would be fun.
I'm looking at some stuff right here, right now.
Are you?
Yeah.
Big charts and stuff.
Ever since I was a little kid, I liked these little colored, like, guidelines for all the different fish you can catch and keep. Mm-hmm. I always love this stuff.
Me too, dude. Me too. I like posters that have like all the trout species mm-hmm. on them or whatever, you know, stuff mm-hmm. like that. All the sharks or whatever. That's cool. But anyway, that's as far as deer hunting goes, I know there's a lot of people that listen to this podcast for deer hunting talk and that kind of thing. It is the element. It's not the element deer hunting. It's not the element wild even. It's just what KC and I are doing. So, but we might try to set up a Q&A for people who have deer hunting questions for us to kind of answer and give our thoughts on here in the near future. So, anyway, just make sure you're subscribed if you're interested in that kind of stuff. You want to hear it in the future. And, guys, appreciate all the support throughout the year. We've got a turkey video on the Meat Eater channel right now if you want to go watch that. And we'll have we got Greg and Eric turkey videos that have landed on our channel. So, some turkey stuff coming up, maybe some bass fishing soon. And we're going to go get after the turkeys again here pretty soon. So, guys, thanks for all the support. Remember, this is your element.
Live in it.
You ever get that feeling? The walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating you? You crave some wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe in a spot all your own. Well, head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, streams, you name it. Search by acreage. You can search by location. You can search by the kind of hunting and fishing you're dreaming of. Land.com. It is where the adventure begins. Hey, everybody, listen up. I got mega huge news. Meat Eater Live is heading back out on the road. That's right. Join me and the crew. Clay Newcomb, Cal, Yanni, Spencer's going to be there. Phil the Engineer is going to be there. Meat Eater Live, headed back out. Now, when you get every ticket, okay, every ticket you buy, you get a signed copy of our new Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook. This tour is celebrating the release of the book. Buy a ticket, get a signed copy, Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook, wild game recipes for the grill, smoker, camp stove, and campfire, which I'll point out is a $38 value. Here's where we're going to go. April 23rd, the Mesa Arts Center in Mesa, Arizona. April 24th. The Balboa Theater in San Diego. April 25, The Grove in Anaheim, California. April 27, The Crest Theater in Sacramento. April 29, The Union in Salt Lake City. April 30, The Egyptian in Boise. May 1, The Wilma Theater in Missoula. May 2, The Bing Crosby Theater in Spokane, Washington. May 4, Revolution Hall in Portland, Oregon. And May 5, the last day of the tour, Pantages Theater in Tacoma, Washington. For tickets and more information, visit the events page at themeateater.com. Hope to see you at the show.